Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. NASA has a long-term and long-term goal that depend on funding from the federal government. The Trump administration has proposed increased funding for long-term manned space flights to Mars and the moon, but that would come at the expense of long-term funding for NASA's Wide Field Infrared Survey Telescope. Joining us by phone is astrophysicist and Forbes and NASA columnist Ethan Siegel. Welcome to the show, Ethan.
Hi there. It's my pleasure to be here, although I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, I read your article about that. We'll talk about that. Also a lead researcher on the WFIRST Science Investigation Team and Ohio State University Astronomy Department Chair, David Weinberg. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I've heard so many great guests on your show over the years, so it's a great honor to join their ranks.
Thank you. Let's talk about WFIRST and what it really does, you know, for regular people.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, all of your listeners will be familiar with Hubble Space Telescope
right.
and, you know, the fantastic images it gives us of the universe and the great discoveries that it's made. And, you know, the space buffs will know about some of the other great NASA telescopes like the Chandra X-ray Observatory or the Kepler mission that's finding planets around other stars. WFIRST is intended to be the big NASA flagship mission of the 2020s. And it's a telescope like Hubble, but because of its equipment, it can map the sky 100 times faster. And so for particularly for things like understanding the contents of the universe, understanding what's making the expansion of the universe speed up, for discovering planets around other stars, that survey speed makes a huge difference and makes it enormously more powerful.
I think I read something, a description that it was like a HD or camera with a wide angle lens.
I think that's right. That,
okay.
that the you know the next. Big thing. So next year, NASA is going to launch the James Webb Space Telescope, which is also a fantastic mission. It's even bigger than Hubble and particularly sensitive to the kinds of things you need to see forming stars and the most distant galaxies. But the James Webb Space Telescope is really a telephoto lens. It observes a tiny patch of the sky at once, but very, very sensitively. And WFIRST is the wide-angle lens, and it's what you use to really map the universe. But it can do that, you know, with the same kind of acuity and resolution as Hubble.
And what is the importance of having a wide angle on this? What are you going to see that you wouldn't see with a small swath?
Right. So there
besides the obvious.
Yes. So
okay.
there are several different things for which this is particularly important. And one of them is that the big surprise in the 30 years that I've been a cosmologist is that the expansion of the universe isn't slowing down because of gravity. It's speeding up. So this is really weird. This is like taking your car keys and throwing them up in the air and having them, you know, accelerate upwards and disappear from sight. So one of the things that astronomers are trying to do is understand how gravity works on the scale of the universe. And our way of doing that is to make very precise maps of large volumes of the universe, and you need a telescope like WFIRST to do that. Another of the big questions is how common are planetary systems like our own? And and we have tools for detecting planets around other stars that are particularly good for finding planets that are close to their stars. So we've found lots of things like that. But if you really want to understand how common are things like Earth, like Jupiter, at the sort of distances they are from the sun, the best technique is one that was pioneered at Ohio State called gravitational microlensing. And WFIRST is the ideal mission for doing that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about WFIRST. That's a telescope for the 2020s being one of the big projects from NASA. But funding has been proposed to be cut by the Trump administration in its proposed 2019 budget. That's what we're talking about right now. You just heard from David Weinberg. He's a lead researcher on WFIRST Science Investigation Team and also an Ohio State University Astronomy Department chair. Ethan Siegel, you wrote an article with the provocative title, Canceling WFIRST Will Permanently Ruin NASA. Why?
Why will it ruin NASA? You know, you have to understand within NASA science, right? NASA has a few things that it's known for. It does science, it does exploration, and it does space operations. Those are the three major functions of NASA. What this is a huge blow to NASA science. NASA science typically has four types of missions. It has small ones, which can be focused on a narrow problem with high risk. And as you go up to larger and larger missions, like, you know, NASA's New Horizons, for example, this is only going to be low risk, high priority missions. Well, flagship missions are as big as it gets. Flagship missions are what NASA itself calls civilization-scale science missions of national or global importance. Things like the Mars Curiosity rover and the Hubble Space Telescope, as David said, are these flagship missions. We get a budget within NASA where scientists prioritize what are our most important problems to address. What can we all get behind in the field to say this is what we're going to devote the greatest amount of our resources per decade to? We had Hubble in the 90s. We're having the James Webb Space Telescope in this decade, in the 2010s. We decided all the way back in 2010, we decided 8 years ago that for the 2020s, we're going to build WFIRST. We're going to study, supernovae and this large-scale structure and exoplanets, and we're going to build a single observatory that's specialized to doing this on a really large scale. According to Thomas Zurbuchen, who's the associate administrator for the Science Mission Directorate of NASA, he said, what we learn from these flagship missions is why we study the universe. This is civilization-scale science. If we don't do this, we aren't NASA. If we cancel this project, it's basically going to the entire field and saying, hey, this thing you ranked as your number one important thing for the problems you want to solve, for the facilities you want to have, for the quality of the observatory that you're going to build, that's the thing we're going to destroy. We're going to promise it to you. We're going to make you devote all your, like, a huge amount of resources in it. And just like Lucy does with the football to Charlie Brown, we're going to pull it away from you at the last minute.
Well,
And that's what's going on here.
Well, I read the explanation from the Trump administration people about eliminating funding for WFIRST. They said that what the James Webb Space Telescope is doing would be adequate.
Right. And of course they're going to say that, because for the cost of the new Air Force One, you could have WFIRST. If someone could just swallow their pride and fly on the same plane that Obama flew on, we could have WFIRST. The James Webb Space Telescope is not at all the same as WFIRST. These are different telescopes with different designs, designed to teach us different things about the universe. James Webb Space Telescope is specifically designed to look at a very narrow part of the sky extremely deeply. It's going to look in infrared wavelengths, so it's going to be great at seeing things like the first stars and the first galaxies to a deeper depth than Hubble or WFIRST could ever see. But WFIRST power is in the fact that it can see wide field things. When you're looking for extremely rare events, when you're looking for things that happen once every 1,000 years, once every 1,000,000 years, once every 1,000,000,000 years, you need to start looking at a wide patch of the sky in order to have a chance to see anything. So what WFIRST is going to allow us to do is it's going to allow us to see large numbers of really rare events. James Webb can't do that. James Webb will never be able to do that. So when you say, oh, you're already getting James Webb, that's basically saying you had dinner yesterday. Why would you need it today, too?
Yeah. David Weinberg?
I'll pick up on a couple of points. So first of all, let me say, Ethan, you know, I'm a big fan of your writing, so it's a great to meet you over the radio. And you know, I really love this phrase, civilization scale missions, because I think how we describe these big missions has changed over time. But I think that really captures the sense of, things whose discoveries are so great that they really, make you glad to be a human being, whether they're done by the U.S. or by Europe or by Japan, although, in practice, the most ambitious things so far have always been done by the United States. And as Ethan said, one of I'm very interested in WFIRST in particular because of its huge impact on the science questions I'm most interested in. I'm a fan of James Webb, but it doesn't address those science questions. But it really, as Ethan's article said, gets at two fundamental things about how NASA works and will work. So the one is that we've had this this process that we've been following for 50 years, in which every decade the community goes through an enormous effort to identify, out of the many things we could do, which are the highest priority, which is the most important. And 20 years ago that was James Webb, and in 2010 that was WFIRST, and that has worked. It's spread to other areas of science. It's a reason that U.S. science has been so effective. So if WFIRST is terminated, it would be the first time that we've actually canceled one of those missions that was the highest priority.
And it's
from
already
a
in
survey.
Gear now.
It's already in gear. So this week, WFIRST is undergoing its mission design review, which is one of the major milestones of the project. And this is after 5 years of very intense work and 10 years of build up to that. So the other thing is that also this cut in the budget means that not only won't we do WFIRST in the next decade, but we won't do anything of this scale the decade after. So really, if this science budget, if the administration science budget rather than the congressional science budget is what eventually goes through, then, we are kind of back. The U.S. is backing off of civilization scale missions for the next 20 years at least.
And Ethan Siegel, before I let you go, what are the prospects for this in Congress? Of course, a lot of things don't get through Congress that is proposed by any White House.
This is absolutely true, and this is hugely important. This is not set in stone. What we got for the fiscal year 2019 is a budget proposal. It is not the budget. So we have a chance to say, hey, this is valuable. This is something where you can call your congressperson, you can call your representative, you can call your senator and say, I want you to save WFIRST. I want you to fully fund these NASA missions that the Trump administration is calling for cuts. We can save this. It has to go through Congress, absolutely. Many things that are proposed to be cut from the budget can be saved, and WFIRST is absolutely one of them. The time for action on this is now. And if we do it, then we can have this mission, and we can have a mission like this every decade. We can serve the astrophysics community. We can help the astrophysics community serve humanity by teaching us about where we all come from, about this one cosmic story that unifies us all. Well, but if we don't, it's Europe, it's Russia, it's Japan, it's China. They're going to have to be the leaders, and NASA would basically be declaring for the foreseeable future, we're not going to participate on the cutting edge.
What's your sense about how this project in particular is being defended at the top at NASA? Ethan Siegel?
What they've decided right now is this is a 2019 budget, and we're going to continue, they said, for 2018 by going ahead with the exact plan that we're still on track for a 2024 launch. We are not going to divert funding from WFIRST. We are going to keep meeting our milestones. As David said, we're doing our reviews. We're doing everything we're supposed to be doing. People are heads down working as tirelessly as they can. NASA's really hoping this won't come to an end. If it does, they will obviously make the best of it. But right now, the sentiment that I'm aware of is people are really nervous, but really optimistic that the public and Congress is going to come through and keep this mission alive and keep NASA science alive.
It was the cost of WFIRST has ballooned since it was proposed in 2011 from less than $2 billion to more than $3 billion. Is that unusual for a NASA project like this, Ethan?
It's not unusual for the cost to go up like that. What is unusual is almost always when people talk about the initial proposal, that's never a realistic number because it doesn't include the whole mission lifetime. There was a big reckoning that happened before this mission ever really got off the ground in a sense of planning in 2011 when the James Webb Space Telescope had cost overruns. There was a big reckoning in 2011, and that really helped change the way that NASA did their accounting. WFIRST, from the moment it was proposed and realistically budgeted, was proposed to be about a $4 billion observatory, and it's still right at around that figure. Now, budget management needs to go well, and there are always room... There's always room for improvement and getting it more accurate. The biggest lesson that people are learning in doing this is they need to have enough cushion, enough soft cost, and enough contingency because this is something we've never done before. James Webb is a telescope we've never built before. WFIRST has instruments and equipment on it that are being designed specifically for WFIRST. When you're doing a one-of-a-kind thing, you're going to run into problems that you never could have anticipated. But that's how you can solve problems and make discoveries about things in the universe that you never even knew you were going to find.
David Weinberg?
Yeah, so I'd like to also jump in on this question of the budget because it's one I've followed in agonizing detail over the years. And I think I've learned a few things from it. One is that when these reports come out, I think it was a mistake to quote a cost in fiscal year 2010 dollars, as the original survey did, because it sounds good at the time. But really, you're taking just the fact that these missions take 10, 15 years to do means inflation is already putting you up at 30% to 50%. But the as Ethan said, there were a few things that that survey, recognized it wasn't putting in the cost. And when you put those in, the actual cost increases are, they're not negligible, but they're at the sort of 50% level. But there have been two big, I think the two reasons that the budget has gone up at this kind of 30 to 50% level are both really exciting science reasons. And one of those is that in 2012, NASA got given to it these two Hubble-sized space telescopes that had originally been designed to look down rather than look up. Huh. And so WFIRST was originally going to build its own telescope, but relatively small. And then the National Reconnaissance Office said, we're not going to use these telescopes. Would you like them? So this is a huge opportunity because it meant that WFIRST really could use a NASA quality, a Hubble quality, Hubble-sized telescope. But accommodating a telescope that is not the one you designed in the first place has some costs associated with it. So that's been one thing. But the other was because of this bigger telescope, it was recognized that WFIRST could also accommodate a new instrument that would allow us to make the first images and measure the atmospheres of giant planets around other stars and would be the stepping stone to what NASA ultimately wants to do in the 2030s, which is take measure the atmospheres of Earth-like planets around other stars and look for signatures of life. And WFIRST is the opportunity to test that in space. So that's an addition to the mission, and that's somewhat increased its cost.
Ethan Siegel, we have to say goodbye to you. I thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. It's my pleasure for being here. And just a note to all your listeners, if you haven't yet called or written to your congresspeople, to your senators, to your representatives to urge them to save WFIRST, now's the best time to do it.
That's Ethan Siegel. He's an astrophysicist and a columnist for Forbes and NASA. We'll continue our conversation about spending on NASA, what is going on, and what is being achieved. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Trump administration earlier this month announced a proposed 2019 budget for NASA that elevates manned spaceflight to Mars and the moon, but at the expense of the planned W-FIRST telescope. That's a project with strong ties to OSU researchers. NASA has several Ohio connections. One of the biggest is the Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. Still with us is OSU Astronomy Department Chair David Weinberg. He's a lead researcher on the W-FIRST science investigation team. Also joining us by phone now, Chief Financial Officer at NASA's John H. Glenn Research Center, Larry Civic. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Larry, what does the Trump budget proposal mean for the Glenn Research Center?
It's a very, very positive outlook for us from the Glenn Research Center standpoint. The budget that was allocated to us for fiscal year 19 was $712 million. On average, in previous years, we usually get anywhere between a $625 and a $650 million budget. So a significant increase in this year's proposed budget. Specifically, because of Glenn's core competencies of what we call communications, power, and propulsion, all those have been highlighted for us here in this budget going forward.
Is this a situation where different tentacles of NASA are competing against each other?
It all comes from down from a prioritization standpoint. I heard the discussion on W-FIRST, mm-hmm. and the discussion at that point from the standpoints of what things were going to continue or not continue, as it was stated, that funding then was diverted to more of our deep space exploration type of projects going forward.
What does the Glenn Research Center work on?
Okay, so like I had mentioned before, from the power propulsion and mm-hmm. communications, you kind of think about it from a power standpoint, it's just like your home. It's how do we actually supply electricity, any type of energy that we need to be able to navigate within deep space or here within, the aeronautics community going forward. So it's from the power standpoint, energy storage and conversion. From a propulsion standpoint, what we do is we work on both chemical propulsion, electric propulsion and nuclear propulsion. And again, those things are also for anything to for us a variety of deep space destinations. And then finally, from a communication standpoint, that's really where we try to improve air traffic management communications, navigation among satellites, aircraft, spacecraft, astronauts, and in any type of our ground operations. So those are our three major competencies that we have here at Glenn.
And how many employees do you have there? I mean, what's the larger impact on the region, economic impact, I should say?
Well, from the standpoint of our employees, we've got approximately about 1,500 civil servants and 1,600 support service contractors, so a combined workforce over a little bit of 3,000 individuals. From an economic impact standpoint, we bring almost $1.4 billion to Northeast Ohio as far as the cascading effects to the jobs outside of us, but so it's about $1.4
billion. David Weinberg, from where you sit and what you're interested in and what you're working on, it doesn't sound like you're necessarily at cross purposes with something like the Glenn Research Center.
Well, so I think the great things NASA does are human exploration and science. Those are the two biggest elements of the NASA budget. Roughly half is human exploration. Roughly a third is science. As a space scientist, I love both. My professional interest is on the science side. I think that part of the part of this shift in the administration budget is towards, in my understanding, a kind of long-term effort towards trying to go back to the moon, which I'm a big fan of. My first public memory is the moon landing, right. And it's a bit depressing that we haven't been there in four decades. At the same time, I think ultimately that's going to require a really big national investment. And I think, so from my point of view, kind of gutting other parts of NASA in order to take little tiny steps towards that is not the way to go. I think that if you want to push human exploration, then, we should put new resources into it. And I think it's great that Ohio has a big stake in the space exploration program through NASA Glenn, and it has a huge stake in the science program through Hubble Space Telescope, James Webb Space Telescope, WFIRST, and all the other missions that researchers at Ohio State, at Ohio University, at Case Western, you know, use to advance our knowledge of the universe.
Larry Civic, does it have to be an either-or proposition? Does it have to rob Peter to pay Paul when it comes to the goals and the many ventures of NASA?
I mean, ultimately, it does, like I said before, it comes down to prioritization. If you only do things halfway on each, neither one of them is going to succeed. And the priorities of the agency right now were to do more of that deep space exploration. As David had mentioned, our focus right now is to a lot of the things to get around the cislunar, trip to the moon. Glenn has a large role of that in what we now call the Lunar Orbital Platform Gateway, which is really going to be, I won't call it a replacement for the International Space Station, but it is going to be a gateway that will orbit the moon that will be able to send astronauts, people to that, and then be able to actually go down to the lunar surface, and then also a gateway out to deep space as we go forward. So that's really where the priorities are there. So we've got to be able to allocate those funds that were given from Congress.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about funding for NASA. It's changing in the proposed 2019 budget from the Trump administration. They would eliminate funding for the WFIRST telescope that would be launched in 2024. It was planned 10 years ago. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are Larry Civic. He's a CFO at NASA's John H. Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. Also with me, David Weinberg. He's a lead researcher on the WFIRST Science Investigation Team and the Ohio, and also is Ohio State University's Astronomy Department Chair. Again, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Glenn Center may be getting a new building. It's a $47 million aerospace communications facility. Is that funded in this proposed budget? And tell us a little bit about that project, Larry Civic.
Yes, it is. It is funded in the 2019 president's budget. What that's going to be able to do is give us a state-of-the-art facility that's really going to be able to allow us to be able to look at advanced antennas, radio frequency type of things, and do that fundamental research to be able to so that we can improve the be able to say data transfer rates of information that we get from the lunar surface or from a Mars standpoint. It's one of our core competencies, and ultimately it's going to be allow us to be able to close a lot of our old antiquated buildings and labs to be able to consolidate into this new building that is going to be started in the 2019 timeframe.
I wanted to go back to something David Weinberg said about the divide between projects that focus on pure scientific discovery and those with more practical, with more practical missions. Larry Civic, how do you see a divide there, and is it growing if there is one?
I don't necessarily see a divide there from the standpoint of the way Glenn Research Center is, from our standpoint, is we do a lot of that fundamental research, and that very beginning there, you have to prove out that research to be able to say that we can utilize that in the ultimate missions in the end. So there is always going to be a piece of research and technology as part of NASA's budget. Again, it's just trying to balance the allocation of those funds between the two.
Yeah, David Weinberg.
Well, so I think, human spaceflight and space probes, space telescopes for doing fundamental science are two of the great things NASA does, and so there's always deciding how to allocate funding and priorities between them. And there's part of what we're seeing and we're in the middle of is the sort of complicated dance between administrations and Congress in setting priorities for NASA, but the same thing goes on for other agencies. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions for the U.S. is, in our rapid change political system, how do you do things that take 10 or 15 or 20 years to happen? And one of the things that I think has worked is that, you know, each administration brings in new priorities, wants to put in new focus, but also Congress is kind of the body that oversees that longer term, those longer term priorities on budgets. And, you know, up to now, Congress has been very supportive on WFIRST, very supportive on NASA astrophysics. And of course, we're hoping that will continue.
Let's see, Gabriel in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Gabriel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is actually what was just spoken about, that proposed budget is just a proposal and Congress has the final authority to fund you.
Mm-hmm.
Will the W1 telescope be completely derailed if a pause button is hit and hopefully, God willing, this blue wave that will take over Congress will fund you? Will that derail it if it's just...
Yeah, that's
for a little bit.
That's a good question. I mean, if it is defunded, does it just go away? Do you just shut it down?
So the recommendation in the administration budget is to cut NASA astrophysics by $200 million. And the astrophysics division has said, you know, the only way we can continue with that lower budget is to shut down WFIRST. I would say if it was 1 year, it might conceivably come back. But really, the proposal is not to delay it. The proposal is to end it and also to end the financial flexibility that would, you know, that would fund the next great space mission in the 2020s.
Because it's a stepping stone.
Partly because it's a stepping stone, but partly it's that, you know, if you cut by $200 million per year, then over a decade, that's $2 billion. And, you know, that is roughly the, you know, that's about what goes into a, you know, civilization scale mission over a decade. So, so it's not clear we would ever regain this ground, but we might. We would certainly try.
Okay, Gabriel, thanks a lot. And then Ed in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Ed.
Hi. My question is, since the John Glenn individual said that they also did work with and for the FAA and NASA both, what is their connection, and is President Trump's proposal to put his personal pilot as the head of the FAA something that they're concerned about?
Yeah, Larry Civic.
So from an FAA standpoint, is, you know, we work with them as far as trying to implement their technology. A specific example of that is our low boom flight demonstration to be able to enable supersonic transport in the commercial airspace. You know, we have to be able to prove to the FAA that we've got the technology and the capabilities to do that, and they do us an overview. So it's really more of a partnership to work with them from an FAA standpoint on those types of things.
Okay, Ed, thanks for that call. Larry Civic, I have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, Ann.
Larry,
talk to you later. Thank you.
You bet. Larry Civic is the Chief Financial Officer at NASA's John H. Glenn Research Center. We're going to continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. To All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Trump administration has announced its proposed 2019 spending on NASA, and which would threaten the future of the WFIRST telescope. That's a project with strong ties to researchers at Ohio State. The Trump budget proposal also would end funding for the International Space Station. Still with us is OSU Astronomy Department Chair David Weinberg. Joining us by phone is Keith Cowing. He's editor of NASAWatch.com. It's a space agency watchdog site. Welcome to the show, Keith.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. You're often cited as a NASA critic, but you're also a NASA fan. Tell us about your history with the agency, where you're coming from.
You know, it depends what time of day and what the questions are. Back when I had a real job, I actually worked for NASA. I helped design the International Space Station. I'm a space biologist, astrobiologist by training. I stumbled into this website stuff 20 years ago, and the first time I was referred to as a journalist, I like to say I was accused of being a journalist.
I hear you.
I had other plans, but here I am.
So. Yep. Let's talk about the International Space Station. How would you grade the process as an investment? What do you think about trashing it?
Well, first of all, you know, it's been an ongoing thing of what is the space station for, and it's always an evolving question, but the point is it exists. You've spent anywhere from 70 to 100 billion, depending on your math. It is one of the most astonishing things people have ever built, and I think its potential is just partially tapped. That said, is that the only thing we're ever going to do? Are we going to want to go elsewhere and do things? And with a budget that is going to be limited, you know, you have to make your priorities. Personally, I don't have a problem with the idea that you would start doing more commercial operations in the space station. I think it's a natural thing. But they just want to precipitously cut the operating budget in 2025, where people have been planning for 2028. And they have, it's sort of a faith-based budget thing, like, well, if you cut it, they will come. And in other words, the business people will show up and pay billions of dollars a year to run it. And, to find another cliche, show me the money. I see that. I think it's foolhardy to just shut it off. But I do think it is important to try and wean NASA from basic operational things so that it can go into exploration again. But you can't just hope the money's going to be there. You have to have a clear path to show that you've thought this through. And NASA has, and this is just probably another question you'll ask, but Congress has been very interested in this. And yesterday, Senator Nelson and Senator Cruz put a joint letter out blasting NASA for not having provided what's called an ISS, or Space Station Transition Report, which they are required by law. When the budgets are written and passed by Congress and signed by the president, they become law. And the law says that NASA will tell Congress by, and this is, you know, past tense, first of December 2017, how they are going to transition the space station. NASA has refused to provide that plan, and I'm told there is no plan.
Could I ask a question of you, which is, you know, what do you think is the impact of the fact that NASA does not yet have an administrator? And does that, you know, what kind of impact does that have on the agency planning?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, quite a bit. Actually, first of all, Robert Lightfoot has done an admirable, and he deserves praise for this job, keeping the trains running on time. When you normally put somebody in as an acting administrator, it's a 4 or 5, maybe 6 month gig.
Yeah.
It's been a year. But Robert, you know, they picked the perfect person for this. But he's a career appointee. He's not been given the blessings of the Congress. He does not have the official rank that goes with being a presidential appointee. And there's a limit to what voice he can have in this discussion. And I have seen this firsthand this year with watching things go back and forth, where normally NASA would say, no, we're not going to do that, or wait, we want to do this. They don't have that voice. They can't turn their volume up to 11, so to speak. They can only go up to 4 or 5.
Well, what's the holdup with the appointment? Why the holdup?
Well, first of all, they nominated someone, Representative James Bridenstine, formally last August, and he's been in limbo now. It's been mostly an issue of congressional math, where depending on what time of day and whether Senator McCain and Senator Cochran are getting better from their illnesses, the votes are somewhere around 49, 51, 50, 50. And normally they don't bring a nomination to the floor unless they think they can get the vote. And it's unsure where they will go. Senator Nelson from Florida, who's running for a re-election, has mounted almost a crusade against Representative Bridenstine and has twisted the arms of every Democrat not to vote for him. So it's a standoff of sorts. And until you get the votes, until the symmetry is broken, until they have the clouds part on that day that they think they can get the votes, it's going to be this way. And neither side seems to be willing to give on this.
Well, what's the controversy over Representative Bridenstine?
Well, it's funny because I've tweeted some stuff because, you know, they say, well, first of all, Senator Nelson says, oh, my God, he's a politician. He's going to inject politics into this. And, of course, we all forget, I don't, that Senator Nelson used his position as and I'm a Democrat, by the way, that Senator Nelson used his position as a congressman back in the day to twist NASA's arm to get a flight in a space shuttle. So I've always said that, you know, if a lawyer with no flight experience can become an astronaut, then a fighter pilot with an MBA who's run several nonprofits can become NASA administrator. I mean, it's sort of one of those where you stand depends on where you sit, you know, sort of things. I think it's a fatuous argument. And if you look at the backgrounds of people who've been NASA administrators, several have been fighter pilots. He has more training than several astronauts who've been NASA administrator have been. He's got an MBA. You know, it's just sort of like, and oh, my God, politics and NASA? Oh, can I
well,
do
yeah,
one?
It's kind of what the show is about today in a way. But what do you think, David Weinberg?
Well, so I'm actually interested to hear these comments because I've been uncertain on the Bridenstine nomination. I hadn't particularly perceived it so much as a partisan issue as, you know, that he was a surprising choice, at least from the point of view of you know, scientists and engineers. Surprising choice isn't necessarily a bad choice, but I do think that part of it has been that, you know, he wasn't someone where, you know, the nomination was one where everyone said, oh, yes, absolutely the right person. But, you know, I'm interested to hear your overall positive review of him as a candidate for this.
That MBA is one thing. But Keith Cowing, what about just science and a science background for something like this?
OK, I've also been looking into that. His predecessor, Charlie Bolden, had a bachelor's degree in engineering. Mike Griffin, smart man that he was an engineer. Sean O'Keefe had a master's degree in public administration, no science.
Yeah.
Okay, you go further back, the last person who was actually, and I'm a biologist, I got the degrees and all that, that you would call an actual scientist was James Fletcher 28 years ago. So this notion that NASA's always been run by a scientist is patently, in use Google and Wikipedia, not true. It's whether, but the important thing is science at the top of the agenda? That's a different issue. And I remember people saying when Sean O'Keefe came in, they said, Sean who? He was the deputy director of the OMB. And he turned around and in many ways was a bigger supporter of some aspects of science than people prior to him with a science background had been. So, again, it's a matter of it's a dance of the politics of the day, of what administration is in, what Congress is thinking, and what the problems are that are presented to the agency. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, my God, Bridenstine's going to kill earth science, yet he stands up and says, I support the decadal plan from the National Academy of Sciences with regards to earth science. That's like saying, I believe in the Bible, and yet people say, but you're going to cut earth science. I mean, what else can you say?
Is this at all part of a bargaining chip then, the budget, the proposed budget for 2019 to Congress saying you want the funding, approve our administrative, you know, the administrator that we want to appoint?
Maybe, but it's always a dance.
Yeah.
And it's always two steps forward, one step back. And, of course, the Nelson camp is saying, we don't like this guy, he'll ruin NASA. But my response is, okay, so you want somebody that the Democrats like more. How is it that the Trump people are, A, going to listen to you after you totally, you know, torpedoed their nomination?
Right.
They're going to give you a guy you like more? No. I mean, just read the news.
It's not his style. I want to ask both of you guys about something else that was cut in this proposed budget. Again, this is all a proposal. Congress still has to come up with its own budget. But and that's education at NASA. Long term, I mean, any thoughts about that, David Weinberg? I'm not sure what that means.
Right.
But
so,
it sounds big to me.
And, you know, and I think it is big. And this is something we've been through before, that the so NASA devotes quite a lot of resources to education at many different levels, to sort of general public outreach about science, to school programs, to other things. And the you know, there, I would say even the Obama administration had a proposal to reduce the education funding at NASA because they were trying to centralize education efforts into fewer agencies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was ultimately rejected by Congress because of the, you know, the reasoning, which I think was correct, that, you know, really there just isn't anybody better than the space scientists to actually, you know, communicate and educate about space science. I think this is, you know, again, if you are trying to find money to to start a lunar program and you don't want to raise the top budget, then you look around, you know, in all the couch cushions for everything you can find, and education is one of the things you can find. But I think it would be, to me, it would be a huge step back, because I do think that you know, one of NASA's really great contributions is the inspiration it provides to people around the world.
Yeah.
And the people in the country. And, you know, it brings so many people like me into science. And so, you know, education is a small part of the NASA budget, and I think it's a vital part.
Yeah. What do you think, Keith Cowing?
I completely agree, and I'll go further. I think it's stupid, short-sighted, disingenuous, non-productive, same old, same old. It's, NASA, I'm 62. I grew up in the 60s. Education is how I got dragged into the space program. I've been on the board of directors of the Challenger Center. I mean, I can't fathom how cutting – oh, it's okay, folks, you know, to make America great again, but kids are going to learn less about NASA. That's okay. Now, and it's crazy. The amount of money we're talking about is less than $100 million.
Right.
And you have to look at the priorities. I mean, just last week they had this big National Space Council party in Florida. The event itself was a dog and pony show, and I get that it was 2 hours long. But they had a reception the night before that was 2.5 hours long that cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000. How many college educations is that? I mean, it's just like the notion of it being coins in the sofa. Yeah, absolutely. It's worse than that. It is something that you can always just toss away, saying it's sort of like the Washington Monument game. You're like, well, we'll have to close the Washington Monument. You pick something that's going to really annoy people.
Hmm.
They've tried it in the two budgets that they've had so far, and each time it's been walked back. I predict this will not stand. And in terms of funding at NASA, whether it should be doing education, you know, again, it's been doing it for half a century. There's people like your guest and myself who resulted from this. I think they're doing pretty good so far.
One of the huge assets that NASA has is, I mean, as I walk around, I'm just stunned at how often I see people wearing T-shirts, jackets with NASA logos, NASA patches. I mean, it helps that it has a great logo.
It is a cool logo.
But that, you know, people just from all walks of life, you know, they are inspired by it. They love it. And, you know, I see NASA, the NASA logo, you know, being worn by people all over at football games and airports.
Aren't the tours that you get at the Space Center in Florida, isn't that part of the education program? I would think it is.
I honestly don't know what part of the budget it comes from.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, there's education at NASA has a big E and a little E. There's an education office where money comes from Congress to do education programs.
Mm-hmm.
And many members of Congress stick their own programs in, whether it's museums and so forth.
Yeah.
And then they have what's called outreach, which, depending, I guess, it's education. They just don't want to call it education.
Mm-hmm.
So NASA actually does do a lot more than if you were to just cookie cutter it up and say which is education, which is not.
Mm-hmm.
But still, in terms of just the overall percentage, it's a small fraction. It's the consummate aspect of American soft power. I can tell you an example of a friend of mine who was traveling in Chile. He was headed to an observatory.
Hmm.
He stopped in a little town on the coast, and he just pulled his camera out. He was at a school with some kids, and there was a kid there with a little tablet computer, and he had a NASA T-shirt on.
Hmm.
This is the former NASA Center Director. And I asked him later why. He says, we couldn't figure out why. Well, I sort of pieced it together later. This was taken about 200 miles from where the Chilean miners trapped, and NASA came in to rescue them.
Oh, yeah.
In that part of the country, NASA is viewed, that's the heroic logo. That is a symbol of what you can aspire to, people do things right. And I've seen it around the world. I mean, this is the most penetrating
Keith, I don't want to cut you off, but I have to because the show is over. But Keith Cowing, editor of NASAWatch.com, a space agency watchdog site, thanks to you. And David Weinberg, Ohio State University Astronomy Department Chair, thanks to you as well. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, everybody else, for listening. WOSU.